Well, obviously, the real situation on the ground is tragic as millions and millions of Sudanese continue to be forced from their homes and forced to face hunger and famine and horrible atrocities. The energy here, though, is very, very positive. We have a diplomatic coalition that's come together that is determined to produce results for the Sudanese people and try to work on implementing the agreements the parties have already made at Jeddah and under an international humanitarian law on civilian protection and food and medicine access and cessation of violence. And we're regularly engaged with both RSF and SAF through phone calls and other means. And in today's modern world, we can continue with these negotiations, and we are going to continue to do everything we can, building on things like the opening of ADRE and how to make sure that's translated into results right away. So I think we are eager to continue working in this format, and the results have been really positive so far. We do not yet have that a commitment, which I think is tragic, but we will continue to work. We are in touch with the SAF many times a day, both as a team, but also the individuals that are here, the Egyptians, Saudis, ourselves. So we live in a modern world where we can find ways to consult as we did beforehand and move forward. We obviously would prefer if President Burhan chose to send a senior SAF delegation. I think we'd be able to make much more progress for the Sudanese people, particularly on the issue of cessation of hostilities. But again, both parties have already agreed to the Jeddah declarations, and we are working hard to figure out how we can enforce those and get agreements along the way, not just from SAF and RSF, but also from all of us as international actors who want to contribute to peace and addressing the famine in Sudan. So we have lots of ways to do that. First of all, we've had, if you think about particularly the amount of time that that the Egyptians and the Saudis have spent with SAF over the last few weeks, the last few months, our own consultations, the work of the UN, the AU, and others. This is clearly a group of people that are extremely steeped in the position SAF has and continue to communicate on that on a regular basis. And in the world we live in, we can continue to go forward with negotiations as we've done. We call it virtual proximity talks for now, and the same thing with the lines of communication with RSF. So it was very clear from Secretary Blinken and President Biden that they wanted us to proceed, no matter how we were able to produce the most we could for the Sudanese people who feel the urgency of this famine and this war. So, one of our top priorities was to get the border crossing open at ADRE, where you have over 1 million people inside, who are already at famine conditions. And I think one of the things we're doing is not just pushing to get that open, but as you said, it's got to translate into convoys of trucks. Those trucks have to get across the border. We have to make sure the RSF is guaranteeing their safety and safe delivery to get in. We need to make sure that that gets to the people who are most vulnerable, and then that continues. That's exactly the kind of result we're trying to produce. Same thing on the issue of the shellings, the bombings, and the violence against civilians. We are working on ways that we can ensure compliance with that. We'd be able to do more if SAF was here. It is a limit, but it is not a total barrier. We are going to continue to work on agreements from the parties to enforce, again, the agreements they've already made under the Jeddah process. And we hear exactly what you're saying. The Sudanese people have said they want action now. And that's why we went forward with this initiative. We're not going to let anything hold us back from doing what we can to protect civilians in Sudan. But again, we could do more with greater participation. Well, first of all, there's a reason international humanitarian law exists. It's supposed to apply whether you're a military or a militia, whether you're in wartime or peacetime. And these should be the baseline standards. There should not be a weaponization of starvation. And we are pushing both parties, both the military and the militia, to abide by that. And yes, we can try to get unilateral responses from them in terms of commitments of protection of access and aid. We really need that partnership, though, with SAF to be able to do more, as well as with RSF. But these should be universal standards that are respected. Our goal is a national cessation of hostilities and full humanitarian access to all 18 states. We know we're not going to get that from this round, but we are going to continue to take the steps we can in that direction. And we are welcoming the partnership of anyone who can help to get us in that direction. But it's a horrific situation. It just boggles the mind, the scale of suffering that's seen, and how invisible that has been. And in this August, when we wanted to make sure, when the world was sort of going on vacation, going to sleep, that we were jolting the world awake, along with our Egyptian and Saudi and other partners in this effort, because that's what we've heard and been asked by the Sudanese people to do. But it's the results that matter. We have not done enough. We've given $1 billion to humanitarian aid. We're proud of that, but we need to do more. We need to do more on access, and that's why we're here. So first, we warmly welcome. We are very, very appreciative that the Adre border crossing has been open. We wanted that opened months ago. And as you know, it's the gateway into some of the areas of most acute famine, as well as other forms of civilian suffering. The Tine border was always an enormous waste of money, a waste of fuel, and a waste of time to get the food back around to where many of those most in need were there. But we are glad that it's open. We need to see that translated into trucks coming across and getting to the people who need it. That's one of the things we're focused on here with this diplomatic coalition and team that's trying to turn that into results. The situation in Kordofan and Blue Nile and in the south, we see as very, very serious, as we do the situation in Omdurman and Sinnar and so many other areas that are suffering both the shelling and the famine. We do believe that we should work with all parties on international humanitarian law. That is not a gift of legitimacy. That is the reality of how humanitarian law functions. We do respect the sovereignty rules that apply, and so do the UN systems that go through. And we actually share a very deep concern about weapons coming into the country, and particularly into the Darfur area. But the truth is, that is a separate conversation from what we've seen so far. So we need to understand that food and medicine should be able to access all 18 states of Sudan across borders and across lines. That is consistent with commitments both parties have already made under the Jeddah Agreement, in addition to international humanitarian law. And one thing we hear from both sides is an interest in enforcing Jeddah. That means allowing food and medicine to all areas, including the areas in the Nuba Mountains. Well, we have been putting enormous amount of pressure to get the Adre border open. We are glad about the announcement yesterday, and we are working around the clock now to make sure that the warehouses of food are going to be put onto trucks. Those trucks are going to get to the border, across the border, that RSF is going to need to commit to the safety guarantees of the passage of those trucks and the delivery of those efforts. And Zamzam Camp needs to be absolutely one of the top priorities, as we've seen far too many facing starvation and famine. And again, there are many parts of the country that are facing this kind of horrific conditions, including in places like Omdurman and Kordofan and Sinnar, so many places. And I think that what we need to do is try to work all of them. That's what we're doing. We're presenting proposals back to the SAF and the RSF. We'll continue to do so on things that can make a difference. And that's exactly what we want to continue to hear from the Sudanese people, is their views on what they expect to happen on the ground, and make sure that we're moving forward both with the international community and the actors inside to deliver on that. The situation's just absolutely tragic, and it's actions that matter.
Kamal, I'm sorry, can I just interrupt? We only have time for one more question, please.
Thank you. So first, we were really happy that the highest ranking ambassador in our system on gender and women's issues holding an event with Sudanese women in Geneva that is happening concurrently with these talks. The totality of the U.S. strategy on Sudan is much more than just this initiative. We are also very committed to supporting the Sudanese and African Union-led political dialogue. We are committed to supporting the role of women and youth and investing in the capacity of civil society in the country. And consistent with that, our ambassador, Rao Gupta, has brought together an incredibly talented group of women who both have technical expertise on issues related to the talks and advocacy. I met with them, as I did with many, many Sudanese women and civilians ahead of the talks. We are continuing to engage with them and other civilians during the talks, though there's not formal participation. This is an ongoing dialogue with the Sudanese people that informs our strategies and priorities, as well as, of course, having the local knowledge of things that where many solutions come from the people much more than they're going to come from us. But we can help put some international and diplomatic pressure behind that. So that's a core value in U.S. foreign policy. And certainly the Biden-Harris administration has put a huge emphasis on our engagement and support of Sudanese women as part of this strategy. They will be the first to tell you they don't claim to represent or speak for all women, but they do bring important voices into the room. And we all know that while all the Sudanese people have suffered, certainly women and girls have borne so much of that suffering and continue to. And it's important for us to remember as we prioritize issues that can be worked in the broad breadth of the Jeddah Declaration implementation. Yeah. Hearing from the people helps us understand their solutions we may not have seen and the priorities that are felt most on the grassroots level. And that comes to your last point. Our message is, we have heard you. The message has been clear. You want to see greater action on the issues of silencing the guns, getting food and medicine to people, and protecting civilians. That is part of a longer-term effort to ensure the civilian democratic transition that was the dream of the revolution in 2019. We need to have that inclusive civilian dialogue that as part of that process. This effort is an urgent, time-limited effort to get to cessation of violence and implementation of the Jeddah agreements. We've built a diplomatic coalition that we think can help to enforce that. We are doing what we can with the virtual engagements with RSF and SAF. We would be able to do much more if SAF sends a senior delegation. But our message to the people, as you've been heard, we are doing what we can, and we're going to continue to push until the people of Sudan have the dignity, security, and future that they deserve.
Great. Thank you.